Siddhanta Sahita Kaur Srila Prabhupada Ki. Anchakalpa Truvyasya Vipasindhu Vipata Patitanam Pavibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. Why is it that talks about Krishna have such value? The whole world is talking about so many things. So many subject matters are considered vital. Economics, finances, purchases, selling. Topics about the body, topics about the mind. But why is talking about Krishna so special? When we understand the Supreme Absolute Truth, we will realize that Krishna is not different from talking about Krishna. In the spiritual world, there's no difference between the person and the person's activities, the person's names, the person's qualities, the person's forms. Our prayer is that by chanting the Maha Mantra with attention, one day we'll get a glimpse of how Krishna is the same as his name, his form, his qualities, and pastimes. How do we begin that quest? In the Padma Purana, it is stated, Atat Sri Krishna Namadi Nabhavid Kayam Indriya. No one can understand Krishna with their material senses. But if you adopt the authorized process, you can experience Krishna in truth. And how do you begin that authorized process? Seva Mukhi Jivadha. Devotional service begins with the tongue. So everyone has a tongue. What is the difficulty? The business of the tongue is to vibrate and to taste. In bhakti, we taste what is offered to Krishna, and with our tongue, we vibrate sounds about Krishna. Because talks about Krishna are the real wealth. The more we talk about Krishna, the more the reality of Krishna becomes known to us. So much so that we become addicted to talking about Krishna. Just like materialists are addicted to talking about material subject matters. They can't stop. You know, when you go to work, when you go to the office, when you go to the university, you're hearing talk, talk, talk. Constantly. No one can stop. We want to be like that for Krishna. We want to be in a way that we can't stop speaking about Krishna. What's troubling us, however, is that unconsciously we are impersonalists. We have this vague notion that somehow or other beyond Krishna there's something. And that Krishna is the representative of something greater beyond him. Why do we think like this? Because subconsciously we have the notion that anytime someone has individuality, personality, form, qualities, and activities, that cannot be the supreme absolute truth. Why do we have such a judgment? Why do we have such a bias? We have it because we're basing our perception on what we have experienced. We have experienced that anyone with form, with qualities, activities, personality, is defective, is subject to material nature. So then we speculate that the Supreme Absolute Truth at the highest level must have no form, no qualities, no names, no activities. It's amazing how we are so addicted to this speculation. Even though Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Mata Pratulam Nanya Kinchit Asti Dhananjaya, there's nothing beyond me. When Krishna says there's nothing beyond him, that means not even Vishnu or Narayan. They are expansions of Krishna. When you say the Supreme Absolute Truth is perfect and complete, Om Purnam, that means that the Supreme Absolute Truth can expand not only into parts, but also into other complete wholes. Where else will we learn this extraordinary science of the Supreme? Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, Naham Prakasha Savrata, Yogamaya Samavrata. I'm not exposing myself to everyone. I'm not revealing myself to everyone. I choose whom I want to show myself to. For others, I cover myself with a curtain of my mystic potency. This is personalism. Just like you are persons, you don't reveal yourself to everyone. Only to those who you feel personally inclined to do you share your confidential secrets with. So Krishna is a supreme person. He doesn't allow everyone to see him. You must have some qualification. This is all about personalism. You would expect the same thing for yourself. You do not reveal yourself to strangers. So Krishna gives the process, bhakti, how you can gain Krishna's confidence and he will reveal himself to you. Still, people think this bhakti is blind faith, some kind of religion. I was talking this weekend with one young man, teenager. His parents are devotees. So, we were discussing his revolution. How he was not going to do anything that his parents did. Bhakti, that's for the parents. But for me, he was telling me, for me, no, I don't accept that. So I asked him, how is the revolution going?
I said, what are you doing in the revolution? I asked, are you drinking? He said, no. Are you smoking? No. Are you gambling? No. Are you eating meat? No. Are you chasing the girls? He said, yes, but I'm not catching any. So I said, well, what's the point of this revolution then? But then we have to look at ourselves and see how we have revolted against Krishna, and that is our original problem. If we can understand our own rebellion against Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes, then we can understand the teenagers and their rebellion. You want that feeling that it's your own life, that you define yourself. So I asked the young man, how are you defining yourself? What is your identity? He said, I don't know, but I don't want the same identity as my parents. I said, okay, but what is it? What is it? Tell us, what is your identity? He couldn't say. As Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, Dva Bhuta Saga Lokesmin Daiva Asra Evacha. Basically, there are two classes in this world. Divine and demoniac. So, your identity is either cooperating with Krishna's instructions or not cooperating. By cooperating with Krishna's instructions, we develop affinity for Krishna's name, form, qualities, and activities. Especially because cooperating with Krishna's program centers on hearing about Krishna and talking about Krishna. Sometimes we don't understand how it is that simply by hearing about Krishna and talking about Krishna, we're making spiritual advancement. What does Lord Kapiladev explain in the third canto of Bhagavatam? Satam prasangan mama virya samvido bhavanti hrikkana rasayana kata. The talks about the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the association of devotees take on special power. So this is why you visit the temple, not simply out of an empty ritual, but you come to hear about Krishna, to talk about Krishna, and because you're in the association of sincere devotees, those talks take on special power. So much so that Tajjoshanarashu Upavargavartmani, the doorway to liberation from material existence, swings wide open. Even though a pure Vaishnava is not concerned with liberation from the material world. A pure Vaishnava, or one who is aspiring to be pure, is simply praying, may my consciousness be fixed more and more in Krishna's service, birth after birth. A pure-minded Vaishnava is not aspiring for freedom from material conditions. He or she is simply thinking, how can my offering of service be better and better? Birth after birth, if necessary, I don't mind. When you're hearing about Krishna and talking about Krishna in the association of such devotees, the talks become extremely potent and sweet. It is true, if you want to know details, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains that when a neophyte devotee is talking about Krishna, that sound vibration can bring you to the point of bhajana kriya, engagement in devotional service. But when an advanced devotee speaks about Krishna, that talk can take you to the higher levels of bhakti. Anartha Nivritti, freedom from material activities and desires. Nishtha, firmly fixed in Krishna's service. Ruchi, taste, and on upward. Coming to the temple gives us a chance to seek out advanced devotees and hear from them. And in that way, Krishna's name, form, qualities, and activities become real for us. Krishna himself acknowledges that you can't understand him unless you hear about him through devotees. Krishna himself is explaining himself, but still people, they don't get it. But when they hear about Krishna in the association of devotees, then they begin to understand. So we're making all these arrangements, temples, centers, programs, all so that people can come and hear and talk about Krishna. So if you want to judge your spiritual advancement, watch your tongue. What is it talking about? Watch your ears. What is the sound vibration that's going into your ears and rolling off your tongue? And then look and see who's around you. What are they talking about? What are they listening to? Then you can know the quality of your association. And that will reveal the quality of your spiritual advancement. So our biggest problem is we don't know Krishna and we have doubts about Krishna. We may want to be pious. Let me do a good deed. I'll go to the temple. We may want some material blessing. Oh, there is some problem in my family. Let me go to the temple and get some blessings for my material situation. Of course, Krishna himself says that there are different types of persons approaching him, and they all have merit. Even those who approach Krishna with material desires are sukriti. They have auspicious merit. Still, the pure lover of Krishna is in a special category. And Krishna comes as his own devotee, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to demonstrate what it's like to love Krishna purely. So much so that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Mama janmani janmani isvare bhavatad bhakti ahoita kitwe. Birth after birth I don't mind as long as I have service to Krishna's lotus feet. So bhakti is completely service-centric. We want to see how our senses are engaged in Krishna's service. We are about much more than religious belief. We are about active, dynamic engagement in Krishna's service. And in that way, through active engagement in devotional service, Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes become known to us. Even though the greatest demigods become bewildered by Krishna. Even they see Krishna, but they're still bewildered. Just like Indra. Govardhan Puja is coming next month. And you remember the foolishness of Indra, who became so angry that he couldn't recognize Krishna. Who is this little boy in Vrindavan who has interrupted my puja? Indra actually thought that little Krishna was taking Indra's share of the yajna. And therefore he sent such an unprecedented storm over Vrindavan, a storm that is only seen at the time of cosmic annihilation. Indra called for those kind of clouds, the Samvartika clouds. That's how angry he was. Who is this talkative little boy? Why are the residents of Vrindavan, headed by Nandamaraj, listening to him? This little boy does not know the cosmic situation, and they're listening to him. He's impudent, he's talkative, he's foolish. That's Indra. He became puffed up by his opulence. Brahma himself was amazed by Krishna's pastimes. Brahma had just seen Krishna kill Agasura, the snake demon. And then Brahma was watching with amazement the lunch scene of Krishna eating with the cowherd boys. That was even more amazing to Brahma than Krishna's killing of Agasura by entering into Agasura's mouth and expanding himself and choking the demon from the inside. More amazing than that was when Brahma's watching the lunch scene. He began to think, is this my worshipable Lord? He saw Krishna and the cowherd boys sharing prasad, having such a good time, laughing, joking. So Brahma thought, let me be scientific here. Let me make an empirical test. I will take away the cowherd boys and calves. And then we'll see what happens. What will Krishna do? How will Krishna react to the situation? The acharyas point out that Brahma was even thinking, maybe Krishna will come to me and beg me to give back the calves and cowherd boys. But you know what happened. In a split second of Brahma's time, he changed his mind. Just like you may think to do something, to say something to someone. I should. And then, no. Yes, husbands do that all the time, yes. They have learned, right? Split second, change your mind. That's all that Brahma did. But his split second was a year of earth time. So although Brahma came back a split second later, no, I shouldn't do this. A year had passed of earth time. Brahma felt ashamed. He was not as bad as Indra. Indra was angry and lost his intelligence completely. Who is this young boy? Brahma was just amazed by the lunchtime pastimes. And is this really Swayam Bhagavan? Sarva Karna Karnam, the cause of all causes. Is this my worshipable Lord? Govindamadi Purusham Ammajami? I'll just make a little test. But then later he felt ashamed. I'm interfering in Krishna's pastimes. And in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, Brahma offers such beautiful prayers to Krishna. One of his very first prayers was especially meant for those from Bharat. How was that? Brahma said, there may be people who say they know everything about Krishna. Let them talk. As far as I, Brahma, am concerned, everything about Krishna is beyond my mind, my words, my intelligence. Brahma spoke that particularly for Because you've heard it many times. Yes. Oh, I know Krishna. Yes, yes, yes. Brahma says, no. Even Brahma doesn't understand. It is true that for the non-devotee, Krishna is a problem. His human-like pastimes attract us, but at the same time, there's a danger because we can think, that because these pastimes are human-like, therefore Krishna is an ordinary person. Even though Krishna's Naralila, his human-like pastimes, always show you that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Still, people become bewildered because they're not approaching Krishna through devotional service. In Krishna's Vrindavan Leela, he's careful to show his opulences in a way that does not disturb the madhurya, the sweetness. When he kills Putana, he does it in such a natural, baby-like way. He sucks her breast and sucks out her life. When he's interacting with Mother Yashoda, she binds him with a rope, but the rope is always too small. So Krishna is being inconceivable within the context of human sweetness. Whereas outside of Vrindavan, Krishna can demonstrate inconceivabilities that show power and opulence. So as I often explain, there's an advantage to Krishna's human-like pastimes and a disadvantage. But if we approach Krishna through devotional service, there's simply all advantage because then we can understand Krishna in truth. At our retreat Friday and Saturday at New Nandagram, we were speaking about how no one understands Krishna. I asked the audience of students, young professionals, what do you know about Krishna? 70% of them told me, when they raised their hand, oh, I saw some videos on TV, I saw some Mahabharata shows, Krishna did this, Krishna did that, but no one had any definitive knowledge of Krishna. This is the great tragedy. Of course, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Name vidu suragana prabhavam na maharshaya aham adir hi devanam maharshinam chasarvasya. Krishna says even the great demigods don't understand him. Even the great rishis and sages don't understand him. So how is it then that we have a chance to understand Krishna? Especially in this day and age of so much misunderstanding, in spite of Bhagavad Gita being available. I was looking at the number for the total number of Bhagavad Gitas that have been distributed, Bhagavad Gita as it is, since Srila Prabhupada made his first publishing of that book. So many languages of the world, 55 million copies of Bhagavad Gita. So you would think that people will be able to understand Krishna. But they need help in their reading of Bhagavad Gita. They need the association of devotees. They need to hear the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita in the Sangha of devotees. Then their understanding progresses quicker and they get the sweetest taste. This is the advantage of coming to the temple. This is the advantage of going to a holy place. Not the building in of itself, not the holy place in of itself, but because of the devotees who are present at such places. When you hear about Krishna in the presence of devotees whose life and soul is simply Krishna's pleasure, there's a special potency in the atmosphere. So even amongst persons who want to be God conscious, there's such a lack of information. Everyone knows, right? If you want to know something, you Google it, right? But you'd be surprised to know that the number one question about God on Google, what is it? It's about a video game called God of War. That's the number one question about God on Google. Yes, you know this game? Yeah. First he shook his head. No, then he... That's the number one question about God. But for those who actually want to make some theistic inquiry, the number one question is, who created God? You see, people don't have the most basic understanding of how God is the cause of all causes. Due to mundane speculation, people think everything has a cause, so what caused God? And so that's the topmost question they ask to Guru Google. You know that verse in 4th chapter Bhagavad Gita? If you want, Tadvini Pranipatena, if you want to know the truth, just Google. What's the second most popular question directly about God once you get past God, the video game God of War? The next question is, why did God make so much suffering in the world? We want to blame God for all our problems. Sometimes even our own devotees, when they inevitably encounter some material difficulty, they become angry. How can Krishna let this happen to me? I did so much pujas. I donated so much money. Every day I was touching the Bhagavad Gita before I go to work. And now there's sickness, there's some financial difficulty, some calamity. Why? How can Krishna do this to me? When Krishna has Arjuna declare in Bhagavad Gita, Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. My devotee will never be vanquished. He's referring to your spiritual life. He's not referring to your material body or your material assets. Anything material must be vanquished, right? Everything material has a beginning and end. So Krishna is not assuring you that there will be some permanence to your body, to your health, to your finances. But he is assuring you that if you stick to the path of bhakti, your spiritual life, the most important thing, will never be vanquished. In this way, you can see that bhakti is for real. There is another dimension to existence beyond matter. But because we're so attached to material gratification, when there's a problem in the material progress or gratification department, we blame Krishna. We blame God. How could you do this to me? How could you let this happen to me? Because we have this idea that Bhagavan is meant to facilitate our material enjoyment. What's the third most popular question directly about God? You'd be surprised. Why does God hate me? This is like what a little child would say when the child doesn't get his or her way. Maybe some of your little children have even said that to you. Why do you hate me? You're not letting me do what I want. You're not giving me what I want. Why do you hate me? So we're like that rebellious child. Just like the teenagers rebel, the adults are also rebelling. I will make my own life. I will offer some prayers to God, and then I will live my life my way. Whereas the teenagers, they just are more practical. If I'm going to live my life my own way, then I have nothing to do with God. But the adults, they put a little sugar on top. Meanwhile, they're doing whatever they want, right? So the children see that. You make pranams, you go to the temple, you put something in the hundi, but you're just doing your own thing. So we teenagers, we'll save the money. We won't put it in the hundi. And we'll do our own thing, just like you. Bottom line is the same. Yes, your children are watching you. And what the children are thinking is that mother and father are going through such contortions with this religiosity. All for material benefit. Why don't they just act for material benefit without the religiosity, without the dharma? Life is simple. But if the parents, over a period of time, can show the children the wealth of pure bhakti, at some point in the child's life, maybe not immediately, but at some point, they'll take notice. When our sense gratification is impeded, interfered with, then we become angry and we wonder, why does God hate me? How could Bhagavan allow this to happen to me? Me, his faithful worshiper. But these material bodies will always be a problem. The material world will always be a problem. Sometimes people ask, why is Bhagavad Gita spoken during a war? If Krishna is present, why then is there this war? But Bhagavad Gita is not sentimental. As long as you have human society in the material world, you will have war. But at least in Bhagavad Gita, the war was fought in some remote place, far from the civilians, and it only involved professional military persons. What does war today involve? First thing is attack the civilians, especially women and children. That's warfare today. When you think of some war horror, often people think of when the atom bomb dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the end of World War II. Most people don't know that more people died in the firebombing of Tokyo than died when the atom bomb hit Hiroshima or Nagasaki. This way, that way, there's always some conflict because this is the material world. I was just reading today how if the U.S. military computers show that there's a nuclear attack on the USA, the president of the USA has 30 seconds to decide, is this for real or not, and launch a counterattack. 30 seconds. And what if the computers are malfunctioning? Which never happens, right? 70% of who is in this room, you're working with IT. You know, problems happen. So you think that with the computers that deal with the nuclear missiles, they'll never malfunction? Former Secretary of Defense of the USA, he tells a true story. While he was working in the Defense Department as undersecretary, before he got the top post, he was awakened in the middle of the night with a phone call. Sir, our computers are showing that, well, some of our computers, not all, some of our computers are showing that 200 missiles have just been launched from Russia to attack the USA. So at first, this defense administrator was shocked. Oh no, is this the end of civilization? But then the person calling him let him know, we realize it's not true, but we're wondering, how is it that the computers are showing this? We have a computer malfunction. For real, this is serious. Some of the computers were showing that a nuclear strike of 200 missiles has just been launched against the U.S. So, the military had just a couple of minutes to decide, is this a computer malfunction because some computers are showing this, other computers are not, or is this the real thing? If it's a real thing, then they have to launch a counterattack before all their missiles are wiped out. They have to launch them. Who destroys everyone first? No one survives. This is human existence. Where there is lust, there must be anger and war. So Bhagavad Gita is not sentimental about that. Yet people wonder, why is Krishna speaking Bhagavad Gita in the middle of two armies on a battlefield? Krishna is showing you, bhakti is for real life. Life in the material world involves eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Bhagavad Gita deals with that in such a way that human beings can achieve the perfection of life. Sometimes you think, oh, Bhagavad Gita is not for the real world. It's for some rarefied atmosphere, not the world that we deal with every day. So Krishna says, all right, I'll speak Bhagavad Gita in between two armies, right at the start of a war. Now what will you say? Still you criticize. Why are you speaking during a war? Whatever Krishna does, someone's going to object. If Krishna dances with his unlimited, all spiritual girlfriends, people object. But those same people, they want to dance with girls, especially not their wives. There's a certain class of persons that whatever Krishna does, there'll be objection. Of course, No one is like that in this room. But what I want to explain to you is that we are unconsciously affected by impersonalism. Therefore, we have doubts about Krishna's form, qualities, activities, his personality. Can that really be the ultimate, right? We have been contaminated thinking that first there was the impersonal and then the personal. Even though Krishna tells you directly in Bhagavad Gita, that's not the case. Krishna says, unintelligent persons think, first I was impersonal, and from this impersonal came the personal. The devotees understand that the supreme source of everything has everything at the source. When Krishna says everything emanates from him, he means everything. If there's no personality, individuality, qualities, and activities in the ultimate source, then how is it in the emanations from that source? Yet, when we're presented with the activities, the qualities, and pastimes of Krishna, oh, I don't know. Is this for real? There have to be those personal characteristics in the supreme source. Otherwise, where do they come from? When Krishna says everything emanates from me, he means everything. But we are so dull because of lack of spiritual intelligence. But by hearing about Krishna in the association of devotees, we make advancement. So we talked about the three most popular questions about God presented to Guru Google. Number one, what caused God? Number two, why does God allow suffering? Number three, why does God hate me? Number four, why does God need so much praise? People are thinking, God has some ego. He always has to hear Kijai. Satatam Kirtiantamam. Krishna says, my devotees are always chanting my glories. Why? Why does God have to hear his own glories? Krishna is so inconceivably wonderful that it's natural that devotees glorify him. Krishna is unlimitedly attractive. Therefore, there's no choice but to glorify Krishna. That's how extraordinarily, inconceivably, unlimitedly wonderful Krishna is. In opulence, Aishwarya, and sweetness, Madhurya. It is natural. It's not forced. And when our chanting and talks about Krishna reach the advanced level, you'll see how it flows like nectar naturally, no force. This is what Shukadeva Goswami tells Prichit Maharaj in the Bhagavatam. Shukadeva Goswami congratulates Prichit Maharaj. To you, my dear king, the topics of Krishna are appearing sweeter and sweeter at every moment, fresher and fresher at every moment. That is a symptom of genuine advancement in spiritual life. So this is what we're hankering for, longing for. We want the adhikar. We want the qualification to hear talks about Krishna as fresher and newer at every moment. In the beginning stages, sometimes we get tired hearing about Krishna. Or, oh, I know that, Leela, I've heard it before. Bhagavad Gita, yes, I read it once when I was a new bhakta. When I first became a congregational member, I read Bhagavad Gita. I've heard it before. But as we make genuine spiritual advancement, everything about Krishna, everything spoken about Krishna and by Krishna is newer and newer, fresher and fresher. That's how we judge whether we're making spiritual advancement or not. It is natural to glorify Krishna because Krishna is unlimitedly glorious. You can't stop it in your natural state of spiritual advancement. As Queen Kunti prays, just like the Ganga is always flowing into the ocean, similarly, let my attraction always flow towards Krishna. You cannot stop the Ganga from flowing into the ocean. Similarly, you cannot stop glorification of Krishna. It's the natural activity of the spirit soul. We have the greatest opportunity to hear about Krishna in the association of devotees. We have the chance to move far beyond just blindly performing rituals, blindly doing puja. We have the chance to move far beyond performing service to Krishna, thinking it's some pious activity, punya. We have a chance to get the rarest education in the material world, Krishna tattva, understanding Krishna in truth. At our retreat program this weekend, so nicely organized by Nityananda Priya Prabhu and his staff, I explained that if you want to understand what is the Supreme, then you have to know what it's like to have unlimited desires. But how can you know what that's like? You're a tiny living entity. How many desires can you count? You have difficulty just getting to 10 different desires. Try it. You want money for you and your friends and family. You want happiness for you and your family. You want good health for you and your family. It gets hard to get up to 10, doesn't it? But Krishna, as defined by Kaviraj Goswami and Chaitanya Charitamrita, has the quality of Swaraja Lakshmi. Krishna has unlimited desires and the unlimited ability to satisfy all of his unlimited desires. That definition of God is so unique and so superlative. Where else will you find this information? Purushottama, the Supreme Person, means unlimited desires and the unlimited ability to satisfy all those desires. And that's why the devotees love to talk about Krishna. Where can you find anyone else with unlimited desires and the unlimited ability to fulfill those unlimited desires? And Krishna satisfies all kinds of devotees. Some devotees are very attached to Krishna's power, majestic might. Such devotees like to show awe and reverence to Krishna. Krishna can satisfy them. Other devotees are attracted to Krishna's sweetness. Just like in Vrindavan, even if Krishna does something inconceivable, the residents of Vrindavan, they cannot give up their intimate sweetness. Their relationship of sweetness with Krishna is never disturbed, even when Krishna does something extraordinary. And of course, Krishna is very careful in Vrindavan to do his extraordinary things in such a way that they're still within the realm of human activity, even though what he does is inconceivable. Just like, for example, we said, when he killed Putana, he did it by sucking her breast, which is what a baby does. But where is the baby that can suck a breast and suck out the life too? So that is Krishna preserving the sweetness, the madhurya of Braj. When the Trinavarta demon, the whirlwind demon, is carrying Krishna high into the air, how does Krishna solve the situation? Trinavarta is carrying baby Krishna high into the air. What does baby Krishna do? Becomes heavier and heavier and heavier, forcing the demon to crash onto the ground. So again, this is Krishna acting extraordinarily, but within the context of being a baby. Krishna knows how to nourish the love of all his devotees. And that means even us. Even for beginning devotees, Krishna knows how to develop your love. And Krishna's care for you begins from the moment you take up fully the practice of bhakti. Krishna's caring for you, even though you may not realize it. Just like little children, they don't realize fully how the parents are sacrificing, working hard for the child. Just like my mother, she wrote me a message 1 week ago. Oh, when you were 2 years old, we got you a big train set, electric train set. It covered the whole room in the basement. And you were 2 years old and you could work all the trains. And then, when you were 3 years old, I taught you how to read. I did everything for you, giving you the best. When I was two or three, I didn't know how much mother is sacrificing for me. Similarly, we are like spiritual children. We don't know fully how Krishna is caring for us. We even think Krishna is neglecting us, right? Why hasn't Krishna given me this? Why hasn't Krishna given me that? I have done big service. I made a big donation. Why is Krishna not reciprocating? We're like little children. We don't understand what the parents are doing. But as we mature, then we become more and more aware of the sacrifice of the parents. That maturation, that becoming mature, happens in the association of devotees. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, he would rather live in a cage surrounded by fire than to live amongst non-devotees. Is he just speaking poetry, or is there some scientific ramifications to what he's saying? The taste of bhakti increases in the association of devotees. That is Lord Kapiladeva's point in that famous verse from the third canto of Bhagavatam, Satam Prasangam Mama Virya Samvita. Power, virya, spiritual power is there when the talks are amongst devotees. Taste is there, rasa is there when the talks are in the association of devotees. And as a byproduct, not a primary concern, but as a byproduct, the doorway to moksha, liberation, swings wide open. Even though a devotee is not concerned with that. What was Prichit Maharaj's reaction when he was told that he was cursed to die in 7 days? He said, Let the snake bird come and bite. I don't care. What is my concern? Simply that you all go on chanting the glories of Krishna. When speaking Bhagavatam to Prichit Maharaj, Shukadeva Goswami became concerned. Maybe Prichit's becoming thirsty. What was Prichit's response? No, don't worry about my thirst. Don't stop speaking, because the nectar of what you're speaking, that is the real nourishment, the real sustenance. Don't worry about my material thirst. I'm actually fully nourished by the Krishna Katha coming from your mouth. This is where we want to go in bhakti. And for that, we need the association of devotees. We're coming to the temple, yes, to see the deities, and to associate with devotees. Because by hearing about Krishna in their presence, our transcendental experience increases in sweetness, in depth, and we make progress far from being just a ritualistic devotee, doing things mechanically. That's what your children are watching for. They're just watching. Are you just doing this because it's tradition, blindly following mechanically? Or are you actually developing some taste? Yeah, the children are watching for that. So let us always be thankful for the opportunity to hear about Krishna and discuss Krishna in the association of devotees. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So what is the schedule? Do we have time for questions, or are we going right to... Huh? Oh, okay. Well, one quick question. Yes. This is a good one, yes? You are the only question, so the spotlight is on you. One question. You develop the desire to realign with Krishna in the association of devotees. Otherwise, it's very difficult. What's easy to understand when you're with the devotees is difficult to understand on your own. This is my point. It is not some kind of just statement we're making. Oh, associate with devotees. There is so much depth to that statement that it takes a lifetime to understand. Therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings that I don't mind taking a birth as an insect as long as it's in the house of a devotee. He said, I would rather do that than be Brahma. Rather than be Brahma, I want to be an insect in the house of a devotee. All right, second part. Our bhakti needs guidance. Everywhere in Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam it is mentioned. that bhakti requires guidance, just like a child requires a parent. The child thinks playing is so important, right? You like to play, yes? So important, it must be done, right? In fact, the child is thinking, these adults are crazy, they don't know how to play. Why should I grow up and be an adult and there's no playing? But by guidance, the child starts to understand that there are activities beyond just childhood play. Similarly, by associating with devotees, we start to understand that our material desires are foolish. As Dhruva Maharaj said, I was searching for broken pieces of glass and ignoring the greatest jewel. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai. Rama Balabha ki. Jai. No premanandi.
Who's standing there?